time when we get to hear thoughts of our speaker this evening. And again, he says, one of those men I love. Charlotte taught me that. What? Didn't you, Charlotte?
What was that?
Oh, you didn't hear it? Just say yes.
Okay, yeah. You tried to whistle. Oh, please. Yeah. No, no. I didn't teach you that. I told you. Yeah. That's
okay. Anyhow, this young man I've known for an awful lot of years, and I guess I don't need to tell his story again, how I didn't know he was so tall, so he got his hip fixed, because he used to come in like a letter S, and now he walked in the door, and he's so tall, I thought, holy smokes, what happened to you? He went up to San Francisco and got his crushed hip fixed. And this is a young man I've loved probably for at least 15 years. Right, Dennis?
Please.
Dennis O'Donnell.
Thanks, Millie.
Good one. There's two.
You won't miss a word, Michael. Not a word.
Michael doesn't trust me, and I understand why. Really understand why. I mess up every time. No time, Michael.
No, you got plenty of help. Thank you, Michael.
Well, what an attractive crowd. Well, I want you all to join with me and just invite God to help me make this talk happen. I'm not really a talker like you're used to. I'm more of a reader, and I apologize for that up front. But I just feel so much better knowing that there is something of substance and something that makes sense in what I'm saying. So I fall back on my notes a lot. But how's everybody doing?
Good.
You feeling good?
Happy.
Anybody in a bad mood? How was your weekend? The full moon was on Monday, and a couple of days just before the full moon, it oftentimes will yank me around. I was born in the sign of Cancer, and us Cancer people tend to get affected by the moon and its phases and the full moons. And sometimes it makes me feel kind of elated, and sometimes it puts me on edge, but it definitely can affect me. Why are you shaking your head? Has anybody here completed their taxes yet?
No.
No. I'm still in the process of trying to pull together all the statements and the forms. And it's a project that's not a particularly fun one for me. How does it make you feel? Do you get agitated with the whole process like I do, or... I had a friend once who was a really pretty mellow guy. He founded the Sufi dancing here in town years ago and used to meditate a lot, was a college professor. But I ran into him once while he was picking up some 1040 forms to file for the year's taxes. And boy, was this guy upset. He was really resentful that the government was making him go through all this whole process and all this work just so they could take his money. And maybe tax time can put you in a mood. Maybe a good mood. Maybe you are happily anticipating getting a refund. For me, there are any number of things that can affect my mood. People, places, things, and situations. It's kind of embarrassing, actually, to have to admit that even the normalcy of nature and the cycles of the moon can influence my mood so much, color my outlook, and my perception of life. Even affect my relationships with others. And not just my relationships with people, but I've noticed how much the role mood plays in my spiritual life and in my ability to tune into spirit. Whether I'm doing healing or trying to give messages, if I can't get myself out of the way If a mood has me in its grip so much that I'm preoccupied with it, then I can't be the clear channel for spirit. Maintaining my balance and keeping my moods in check is essential for my feelings and my outlook and my perceptions and my receptivity to life, even my spiritual life. And for me, this matter of staying in balance is critical. I myself have a history of seeking solace for moods and life's frustrations in ways that interfere with my maintaining not only my spiritual but my emotional and physical life as well. I've learned that if I don't maintain a fit spiritual condition that allows for a conscious awareness and contact with God, then I'm in danger of making some real bad choices, and choices that I can't always be sure that I can recover from. I'm sure you recall Millie's lesson number 35 from her book, and it speaks of balance. She writes, "Let's talk of balance. Balance is the harmonious interaction of your own body, mind, and soul with the world around you. This balance also allows communication to flow among you and your angel friends. There are so many roads to creating balance in your life, and all of them are equally important." Now, for the purpose of this talk today, you don't really need to know what all those bad choices are that I'm alluding to, but in a general way, they are the same sorts of comforts that many people choose when they want to feel better. Most of the time, these comforts start out innocently enough, but they can sometimes take hold of you and have dreadful consequences. Now, one of my favorite and hopefully least dangerous comforts I choose is having a chocolate malt. I just love chocolate malts. Something about the incredible flavor when I roll a mouthful of that thick, cool ice cream around my tongue, and I have a way of breathing in just enough air and get it underneath the malt, and somehow it just accentuates the taste of the thing, and I just love it. I take my malt really very seriously. I'm a malt snob. I'll ask, before I order one, exactly how the malt's going to be made, whether it's liquid malt or powdered malt, how they're going to serve it, even if they look like they're game, what the butterfat count of the ice cream is. I get a taste of bliss when I'm drinking one, and I feel satisfaction and a sense of serenity after finishing one. I'm like a little kid, or an addict, actually, in my anticipation. Millie can tell you, actually. She's seen me in action. She's seen how my innocent little infatuation with chocolate malt, my little comfort food, has caused minor upsets and uncomfortableness for myself and for others around me. Chocolate malts have thrown me and others out of balance. Now, I want to tell you a little story about chocolate malts in Seattle. I spent a number of weeks, months, searching for a chocolate malt in Seattle. I figured they had to have one in the big city. And I followed a bunch of bad leads and stuff, but somebody told me the food editor at the newspaper knows nothing about chocolate malts, of course. But somebody told me to go down to South Seattle in the industrial part of town where the truckers and the cops eat, and that they had the good chocolate malts down there. So I went down there, me and my girlfriend, one evening and went in, and I kind of asked among all these waitresses that were there, who here is it that makes the best chocolate malts? And they pointed to this really skinny little anorexic little girl. Her name was Barbie, and she had big hair and big eyelashes and anorexic looking. And I shook my head and I said, no. I said, it's been my experience that in order to make a good malt, you have to enjoy drinking them. And most people that drink them have a little more substance to themselves. And, well, you'd have thought I called somebody a bad name, because I had all of these waitresses buzzing around me in a fit of hysteria and all upset. And they were really defending this woman's honor, I tell you. Well, Barbie did make a really great malt, really one of the best malt makers I've ever seen. But it really alarmed my girlfriend, and for a minute I got a little concerned that, you know, because these were tough, hardcore, you know, industrial waitresses. We're not talking about anyway. So, now you all have your own choices for your comfort. You know, maybe eating a bag of chips or extreme exercise. Some people take comfort in gambling and relish the chance to go to a casino. There's any number of fetishes that people use to shift their mood. As the saying goes, name your poison. Undisciplined or carried to an extreme, they all can turn against you, or at least create undesirable consequences of their own. Watch what happens when you take away someone's comfort. Tell a smoker they can't smoke anymore. Watch the impact on the runner when the doctor tells him he's blown out his knees and can't run anymore. Or tell most everyone in America that they're not allowed to supersize it. They'll have to get along on just one regular-sized portion. You can see moods and outlooks on life shift instantaneously. Innocuous enough at first, many harmless little comforts become powerful influences with the power to throw you out of balance and greatly color your perceptions of the world. The harmonious interactions of my body and my mind and my soul with the world around me can be compromised by little things at times. So mood affects balance, and balance is necessary for me to have a good communication flow with spirit. The past couple of weeks I've had to look into this because a bad thing happened in my life, and it's really kind of thrown me off my feed, so to speak. Breaking up with my girlfriend has set me in a bad mood and triggered my depression, and it's been interfering with my perception of reality and distorting my outlook of the future, and, you know, I'm prone to doom and gloom. But I've been reviewing the ways that I know of to actually restore my balance and to repair my mood, and doing the things that help clear my channels of communication. You know, and this particular loss does touch some of my major life fears, and it hurts. And I've had to take some actions to counteract the feelings that have surfaced. So I've been turning to my support group and counsel and people to remind me of ways that actually do restore balance, but in an honest and healthy way, not just masking it with comforts that ultimately turn against me and make me fat. One key tool I've been challenged to use by one of the wisest men I know is the tool of acceptance. It's not easy to accomplish when you're in pain and mad at the universe. My friend referred me to the writings of a doctor who treated his alcoholism successfully through acceptance. And I'll just read a little bit of this here. It says, "Acceptance proved to be the key to my drinking problem. After I'd been around AA for 7 months, tapering off alcohol and pills, not finding the program working very well, I was finally able to say, 'Okay, God, it is true that I, of all people, strange as it may seem, and even though I didn't give my permission, really, really am an alcoholic of sorts, and it's all right with me. Now what am I going to do about it?' When I stopped living in the problem and began living in the answer, the problem went away. From that moment on, I have not had a single compulsion to drink." And he goes on to write, "And acceptance is the answer to all my problems today. When I am disturbed, it is because I find some person, place, or thing, or situation, some fact of my life, unacceptable to me. And I can find no serenity until I accept that person, place, thing, or situation as being exactly the way it is supposed to be at this moment. Nothing, absolutely nothing happens in God's world by mistake. Until I could accept my alcoholism, I could not stay sober. Unless I accept life completely on life's terms, I cannot be happy. I need to concentrate not so much on what needs to be changed in the world, as on what needs to be changed in me and in my attitudes. Some powerful concepts there. Absolutely nothing, he says, happens in God's universe by mistake. Now that, I got to tell you, is sometimes hard to accept, especially when you're faced with the unacceptable. Now, coincidentally, last week, Time magazine had an article about a new treatment method for whatever ails you. It's called acceptance and commitment therapy. And they kind of contrasted it with cognitive behavior therapy, where you work to actually change your thoughts by rationally recognizing that they're faulty or in error. And acceptance and commitment therapy starts out with the same premise that Buddha did. Basically, you know, people suffer. Great starting point. But rather than fighting the negative thoughts and feelings, it proposes that you accept them as part of life. And the originator of this therapy, actually, who happens to be from El Cajon originally, he states that happiness is not normal. I don't know if I fully agree with that either. But I do know that the fighting with myself and fighting my thoughts and feelings, and especially with my long-standing personal challenges, that doesn't seem to work very well. The acceptance philosophy embraces the idea of reframing a thought or outlook, changing the context of the mindset, so the mindset and the mood doesn't push me around. Acceptance suggests that we learn how to see our struggles as valid and valuable parts of our lives. And that when we're in the midst of accepting the unacceptable aspects of our lives, we're also free to make a commitment to live our lives according to our values. Yes, the pain does come, and yet I can also focus on what life means to me and how to live a life I value. And this helps me get away from the mistaken idea that acceptance is synonymous with resignation. So acceptance is one of the tools I'm having to practice in order to keep maintaining some balance. Is this going on too long? So there's another new tool that I've been enjoying. It's an idea, a philosophy that arises out of the Beauty and Truth Laboratory. It's founded by a guy named Rob Bresnik. And you might recognize his name as the writer of the popular weekly horoscope column called Free Will Astrology. Rob Bresnik is a heyoka, a trickster, a court jester. He is a practitioner of crazy wisdom. And one of the goals of the Beauty and Truth Laboratory is to balance the unrelenting negativity in the news and the entertainment media. So he actually borrowed the term from a Grateful Dead lyricist and wrote a book entitled Pronoia is the Antidote for Paranoia. Pronoia is the opposite of paranoia. A pronoiac is someone who believes that the world is conspiring to shower him with blessings. Now, just as Millie and the angels remind us to notice all the miracles we enjoy, the Beauty and Truth Laboratory asks us to consider the thousands of things that go right for us every day. From the moment I wake up in the morning, my heart is beating and I'm breathing, even though I've been unconscious for hours. I can see light and color, which is the gift of an unimaginable immense globe of fire, you know, coming from continuous nuclear reactions. And it sends down energy, and it converts to light and heat, and it provides not only all of my sustenance, but it provides me a whole lot of entertainment too. It gives me all those colors to see. I live in a climate-controlled house, and with the flip of a switch, I can command electricity to do all kinds of things and provide all kinds of conveniences. I got this water that comes out of this faucet whenever I want. It's clean and parasite-free, and someone, somewhere, is making sure that the electricity and the water continues to arrive for me without interruption. And not only that, but as Millie told you, I have legs. I can even walk. Even though a bad thing happened and the bones in my hips were broken, doctors have figured out a way to rebuild my hip with metal, and I can even walk pain-free now. I have food packaged at home and waiting for me. There's been, you know, many people I've never even met have been working hard to grow the food and package it and deliver it to the store for me. And there are thousands of things that work correctly for me within minutes of my waking up in the morning. But often, if some little thing goes wrong, I begin to think I'm having a bad day. I spill my coffee on my shirt, or my car doesn't start, or I have a flat tire. Well, then I know it's a bad day and things just aren't going right. My brain will have me thinking that nothing's going right, that the universe is against me, even though the vast majority of things are working wonderfully. So indeed, instead of the universe being unfair and out to get me, it really is more like there is a benevolent conspiracy. There really are thousands of unknown people creating the things I need and desire. There really are angels in spirit that are also tirelessly working for my good and my happiness. So pronoia is the antidote for paranoia. And the Beauty and Truth Laboratory wants us to try out this experiment. We start with the definition. Pronoia is the antidote for paranoia. It's the understanding that the universe is fundamentally friendly. It's a means of training your senses and intellect so that you're able to perceive the fact that life always gives you exactly what you need, exactly when you need it. Hypothesis. Evil is boring. Cynicism is idiotic. Fear is a bad habit. Despair is lazy. Joy is fascinating. Love is an act of heroic genius. And pleasure is our birthright. And the procedure. Act as if the universe is a prodigious miracle created for your amusement and illumination. Assume that secret helpers are working behind the scenes to assist you in turning into the gorgeous masterpiece you were born to be. Join the conspiracy to shower all of creation with blessings. So, there's the news from Lake Wobegon. And a couple of the tools that I've been using the last couple of weeks. Acceptance and the universe, or acceptance that the universe is exactly the way it's supposed to be right now. A focus on living life with a commitment to my values and the practice of pronoia, of noticing how the world is conspiring to shower me with blessings. Thanks for listening.
Chocolate
mall in
San Diego.
Ho dads.
Do they have industrial waitresses there?
Yeah. Okay,
Yeah, it's getting shoes.
Well, I think you behave yourself. You're an old
married man. I know.
I get a reminder.
Okay.
Well, I'm going to
get I think that was grand. Well, that sure held my attention. What do you think?
I think, here's your pen.
Oh, thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you, Matt.
I might write something down out of that.
Dennis,
that was tremendous.
Okay.
Was that tremendous? Pretty smart little chicken, isn't he? Well, I'm proud of him anyway. I am proud of him. Oh, Noya? No, that's not the word, is it? I better turn this off here. Come on, Michael, help me turn this off in case we say something that... Come on, Michael, help. It's still red.